it's possible to obtain ODI approval. But if it's not a strategic investor, if it's a new fund, under the current environment, it is pretty challenging to obtain the approval. Of course, it also depends on the size, the sector, where the investor is. And for investors, sometimes, you know, in smaller mid-sized cities where the local government is very supportive, it's easier. And you know, in this way, sometimes it's harder to get the approval from like big cities where there's a high demand USD for overseas investments.
I'd also say that we've invested in over 100 Chinese companies, but a lot of those companies will incorporate, you know, and be wholly owned. It would be a WFOE structure where it's a wholly owned foreign entity, or there's other international structures where it's effectively the shares are held outside of China, and for that's always a way. And in other cases, you have to just look at it and say, well, where do I want my money? And if you think as a portfolio perspective, you know, China is growing, China's gonna grow for a long time. If you're taking a long-term view on it, if it stays in RMB for a while, any early stage venture investment is gonna be a long time before you get the money back anyway. So what's your rush? You know, that it's gonna continue to grow over and over again, you know, continuously. So, as it grows, there'll be more things to invest in. You know, if you get your funds back in RMB, invest in more things in RMB funds at that stage. But there are other tricky ways to get money out and equity out, and lots of people have lots of ways of doing it, including foreign equity swaps, where you have purchases of one company being sold to another company, and you get the equity out of other deals, etc. There's lots of tricky things that can be done.
Okay, now I know you were going to set the stage for us. You're here from Baidu Capital, and we'd love to hear more about what Baidu Capital is doing and your strategy and what you think about the China tech scene right now.
All right, thank you, Rebecca. So Baidu is actually one of the large internet companies in China since 2013 started to make overseas investment and set up the office in Silicon Valley. So over the past few years, Baidu has made a bunch of investments, especially in the artificial intelligence, a core tech of AI and application in different industries in Silicon Valley. We made a bunch of good investments. Now with the challenging investment situation right now we're facing, that I think that the investment on the in the U.S. should not stop, and I think there is a lot more room for both the U.S. Startups and the China to partner together and to look forward towards the larger market globally. So I think worldwide AI application and AI market expanding tremendously in the next decade.
So why is Baidu Capital set up? Why is Baidu set up this fund?
Well, so Baidu actually set up different funds over the past year. One is a very early stage called Baidu Ventures, investing mm-hmm. very early stage AI companies, AI mm-hmm. core tech.
Yeah.
And then there is Baidu Capital, majorly in China, to invest on pre-IPO companies, but mostly consumer-related companies. And now we are raising another fund called Baidu Growth Capital's Baidu Changchun Investment Fund, led by the former CFO Jennifer Lin, that we're going to invest on the growth stage companies because we see that over the past 2 years, a lot of early stage AI startups have been growing very well. And those with this technology relatively proven and relatively mature, and these companies can go across, countries and industries to make more applications, especially that with the software, hardware, and data all combined together, it could really be able to and enable a lot more industries and to transform every industry.
So what's the what's the size of these funds overall?
Overall fund will be $500 million with $100 million anchored by Baidu. So it's going to be, I guess, the first corporate venture fund, but independently run and with a financial return at the go.
I see.
Okay. If you look at Intel Capital like several years ago, Intel Capital is with a similar structure with a really good return on investment and IRRs. Mm-hmm. But Intel Capital made themselves back to the corporate venture, corporate development mode 2 years ago. And since then, the returns to this large corp dev, you know, within the tech firm, the return get, you know, not as good as before. But now we see the AI as a huge opportunity to transform each industry, and we want to make our investment faster, that we want to make the capital flow more free in both China and the US, and to bring the good technology worldwide, not just to China, but we can see that everything is converged together.
And are most of these investments outside China?
It's going to be half in China, half in the US.
Half in China, half in the US. Okay, very interesting. Jim?
So we've covered a couple of different aspects of China-U.S. investment here, right? The first is this notion of outbound from the mainland to the U.S. companies. And I would say from my perspective, I think we're on our 12th or 13th company in the last, call it 8 or 10 years that has been financed. Generally have a Series B or C round by at least one major, if not several, Chinese companies as partners. Baidu is one, but we work with Tencent and with Alipay and Alibaba and Foxconn and a number of others that have invested. So increasingly they have a presence generally in Silicon Valley, in one or two cases actually here as well, and are actively looking in a series of technological areas in which to invest. That's very different, of course, than investing from here in country in China, which I've done a little bit of. And I would say even today is a much more difficult thing to do, in part because you've got to care and feed it and pay attention to it from 7,500 miles away. But it can be a great opportunity, but it is a challenge.
From HBS Alumni Angels perspective, I'm sure you're seeing a lot of interesting companies coming up, and what is the China impact? Is there a lot of, are you seeing a lot of China influence behind these new startups that are coming up?
Yeah, so just I guess for background, HBS Angels were an angel group, about 350 angel members investing in early stage across all sectors. We have about 22 different sectors. We're pretty active. So far this year, we've done about 10 deals.
That's a lot.
I think one thing I personally started to see is actually, it used to be, back in the day, China was the copycat, right? China copied a lot of different ideas from, kind of what we see here. But then over time, we're actually starting to see a little bit of the metabolism in China so fast, things are innovating so fast, we're actually starting to see a little bit of the reverse. So some of these new product ideas are almost, not a copy of the China idea, but taking on its own life form, right? So we found that quite interesting. China and the U.S.
Sure, okay. So we have talked a lot about China and U.S. tech and who's leading in venture capital. And Brian, from your perspective here in New York, what do you see? What do you see the impact of the China entrepreneur, the China VC here in New York, and how do you think it compares and contrasts?
Well, first of all, good to see you. Thank you for doing this panel. So the New York Angels, the largest seed investors in New York, among the largest. We did about 40 deals last year. We are hungry for early seed deals from companies coming from China, but we haven't seen any. Remember we were talking about
Did, but we have about 30 here tonight. They're all over there in case any of you are interested in talking to them.
I just have to say that we see 200 to 300 deals a month. And for the sake of this meeting, I look back and find any Chinese companies sitting up and coming and looking for money at all.
Wow.
Zero.
Wow.
If you're here,
wow.
Please apply.
So I've been traveling back and forth between Silicon Valley and Beijing in the past year. As you say that you don't see any U.S. companies invest in China startups, right, or U.S. investors.
We're not seeing Chinese companies coming to New York. I mean, it's like Hollywood in the 20s. For years, people come from overseas, come to Hollywood, become a star. But many of the companies that are arriving now are still coming from Europe. This has socialist dependencies. They need to raise money here. But we're not seeing the Chinese young companies coming to New York to raise money.
Yeah, I actually wish that they could come here more. But you know, the good and the fast-growing Chinese companies, especially in high-tech, once they are raising for fund, the quota was grabbed immediately, you know, in China. And you probably know that most of the tier one US VCs, they do have the French set up in China, like Sequoia, GGV.
Yeah, there's really no reason for a Chinese company to come to the United States for funding. The funding market in China is so overheated right now. Even the government is setting up all these $100 million funds in every province, you know, run by relatively sometimes inexperienced, venture capitalists. And so the money and the valuations are actually higher over in China for a comparable stage company. So why would you come to where you have to, where you have to give away more equity for less money? You can find it easier in China.
Another way to look at this is actually money are not really the same. If you look at RMB, RMB is actually not the same as US dollars. It's not the same as blockchain Bitcoin dollars, right? So each one of these kind of nomination of value are slightly different. And there's a lot of stuff behind it. Just the fact this crypto craze actually raised a good question, like what is money, right?
For SOSB, we're a global venture firm. And so we have offices in Shanghai and Shenzhen and Taipei as well, but in Hong Kong. So we see the Chinese companies as one fund across the whole globe, but it's only because we're there, you know, and it's only because we have operations, big operations in Shenzhen and Shanghai that we would know. There's no need to come over here in general.
Yeah, I think one of the core reasons is also because a lot of the Chinese companies still want to tackle China first as their initial market. I mean, it's so big, it's four times bigger than the U.S. in terms of population.
Yeah,
and so even for like a GGV standpoint, we see there has been a couple where we have funded Musical.ly or Shop Shops here in New York, for example, but like wanting to tackle both U.S. and China or need some type of strategic involvement from the U.S., but those tend to come from like a later stage as not necessarily initially.
Yeah, so I spoke at WeWorks in Shanghai, and almost, at least maybe anecdotally, most of the Chinese there were ABC, right? Which was fascinating, and the context was that they understood the American marketplace, and they were much broader scope in their ability to communicate, too. So is that true? Is it most of the companies are ABC?
Yeah, not necessarily ABC. We see a lot of Chinese students, whether it's MBA or grad students, who are...
Who studied in America.
Who study in the U.S. for their grad program, but
right.
are from China originally, and
right.
so have the know-how of like both markets.
Correct,
and
right. So that's where we're providing a lot of the input.
Yeah,
education.
I just want to comment on, money is different, and... you probably have heard about the Hong Kong Exchange, which has adopted a number of new rules. One is, the dual class voting rights, and the other one is the biotech Hong Kong IPO. In the Hong Kong biotech IPO rules, there's one requirement, which is the company has to be endorsed by sophisticated investors, which means, if you are a brand name international investor, it's going to help the company to check the box. You will be surprised to see how many Chinese biotech companies now they are desperately looking for sophisticated investors. And Because of this requirement, the companies from now on, they probably will go to sophisticated investors earlier in the stage for a number of reasons. First, you know, they want to check the box early because there's also a 6 months, you know, like a waiting period. You cannot wait until you know, pre-IPO to find a sophisticated investor to come in. And the second part is the valuation, right? Because the Chinese valuation tends to be higher than an international investor would give. So if the investor, an international investor, could come in early, and that would be win-win for everybody. Because at the early stage, an international investor, you know, like could invest at a reasonable valuation. And later on, you know, when Chinese investors invested at a higher valuation, it's a good thing for everybody. So I think that's going to affect, you know, not only the biotech life sciences industry, it's going to change.
It's a big step up for the early stage investor, and as soon as it goes to the IPO, it's a
relatively, you know, like if you know, like you are going to have you know, Chinese investors coming in at a
more money to the
higher valuation, it's better to do it at the later stage versus an
early
stage.
It seems unsustainable, but it is what is happening in China. Yes.
Ryan says it is unsustainable. Okay. Look, we have a lot of entrepreneurs in the audience tonight, and they may be interested to know in, excuse me, in what these VCs up here would like to invest in. What would actually rock your boat? Jim, I know you like boats, so.
I do like boats. What would rock my boat? Well, you know, as Jerry Seinfeld said, what do you like? I like the good things. Small market, going to get really big in a short number of years, really great people. I mean, the answer is most investors have some sort of focus, so obviously it needs to fit the focus. Interestingly, of all three of the investments that I've made that were in country in the mainland over the last dozen years, not one of which showed up in my doorstep here in New York, but was a network related thing. But, you know, I can tell you that for me, I have a thesis in terms of, as it relates to Chinese investing. Most of the investing that we do in my firm is U.S.-centric. We don't care who the entrepreneurs are. Many of them are immigrants from overseas. And actually, in many companies, we have a very hard time keeping them from going back to the mainland to be set up their Chinese because the opportunity set is so high. But there is one carve-out. And the carve-out is I'm interested in expatriation. We do a lot of fintech, financial services related, and I'm interested in outbound flows, not inbound flows. Anytime, you know, throughout world history, anytime you've had a country or a region that has amassed a great deal of influence and power and wealth in a short period of time, the very first thing they've always done is spread that around. Capital controls aside, this is already happening. We've been seeing it for the last decade. We'll continue to see that. And like most things, it generally goes badly before it goes well. So one of the themes that we've had is investing or investing in companies or entrepreneurs primarily from mainland. Generally, our formula is they were educated here for some period of time, so they're naturalized around language and so forth. But they are from there, the roots are there, the families are there, so there's a trust component. You know, I would ask the question, you know, here we are in New York, right? So we have Goldman Sachs, we've got Morgan Stanley, we've got lots of famous brands. Where are the Chinese brands? Where are the big international financial conglomerates? Ping An is not one after all these years, not on the international stage. HSBC does not count. Most of the banks, which were SOEs, even if they're not today truly SOEs, still remain primarily mainland events. So here's why I'm saying that. What's my thesis? My thesis is that 10 years from now, all of us in this room will be able to name two, three, four, maybe five asset brands. Just as Americans post-World War II did not adopt British banks, I believe that the Chinese, in their quest to go out into the world, which they are doing dramatically now and will continue to do, will in many cases want to bring those brands here, but they will have to be fairly international. And so we're looking to back those kinds of things.
Okay, so another DJI or Xiaomi or something like that. The next up and comer.
Truly international. I mean,
truly
again,
international.
More of a fintech focus for me, but yes, it could be. And I have 3 new DJI's products, so maybe I should have just invested to begin with, because I do like their products.
All right, good. So Sean and Robin, what about you? What is it that you would be interested in investing in? I know GGB is doing a lot of e-commerce, and you're here in New York and looking at e-commerce, so is that an area that... Or are there other areas too?
Yeah, we're definitely big believers in consumer internet, and so we invest a lot in e-commerce, whether it's marketplaces, direct-to-consumer brands, or e-tailers. So platforms that really can be global, or brands that can go global, is something that like we're very interested in. We also look at adjacent categories to that, such as logistics, payments, and services as well. We tend to look at companies who want that global ambition because we believe like great companies now moving forward need to be global and to be big enough. And so, especially if you're a founder who is foreign-born or an immigrant or you have a team that's very diverse, that's definitely something that we're looking for.
Okay, and can you name a New York-based deal in the e-commerce space that is taking off here from that GGB is invested in? Just to give people an example.
Yeah, one of the New York unicorns here is Peloton. It is a fitness as a service type of company where you start off with a cycling, but you also have it. It's much more democratized than going to SoulCycle, for example, where you're just riding a bike in a class, but you're actually doing it at home, but over live stream, which is something that is very big outside of the US as well. And so we take a lot of learnings and consumer behavior we see elsewhere and see like, can this work here in the US? And we've seen them be very successful. It's become a cult phenomenon here. And we believe that like Peloton already, has global attraction. And so there's a lot of users in Europe. They're expanding there in Canada and Europe as well. And is China something that could be down the line? And it's something that GGB could help
them
with as well.
Okay. Sean?
Yeah.
I know you're in New York, Taipei, Hong Kong.
Well, yeah, Shanghai. So I actually live in Princeton, so it's not far, very far.
And
we have
in Princeton.
We have an accelerator, FoodX, that runs here, and we have a lot of our hacks companies. We have a bunch of New York investments. I think we have about 65 New York City investments. Some of the more recent ones are like Jump, which just was acquired by Uber. You guys were hanging on in that. You led it in the angel round, and we led it for the next 4.5 years. And then some other folks came in at the end. But anyway, that was a great exit for everyone involved, and a great exit for New York City. And we also invest in a bunch of e-commerce stuff and subscription services, which actually are really difficult to do in China. But stuff like Adore Me, I don't know if you know that, it's the number 2 lingerie company in the world. Victoria's Secret is the direct one that has retail stores. Adore Me doesn't have the retail stores, but they do massive amounts of hundreds of millions of business. And the other New York investments in the hardware space, a bunch of our hardware companies that went through our hacks program in Shenzhen are doing some really good stuff. But our themes at SOSV are hardware, and we're seeing a huge number of great new emerging hardware brands in China now. So it's before, it was maybe 5 or 10% of the companies globally that were coming through our Shenzhen program were from China. Now it's more than 20%, which is really a testament to the industrial design capability and the market finding capability for new market trends that are not just as was said by Mason a bit earlier. They're not copying anymore. They're creating new categories that the rest of the world is copying. A bunch in the robotics space, building houses, robots that climb the outside of buildings and clean windows. You know, those are all like a bunch of Chinese, really great Chinese innovative companies that are coming, will come this way soon. But, and then, you know, in the hardware space, because most AI stuff is actually derived from sensor data, like if you think of autonomous vehicles and whatnot, just because of the hardware specialty of the Chinese expertise set, a tremendous amount of AI, focus over there on machine learning applies very, very well for any type of robotics or application. So those are some of the areas. And then life sciences, where SOSB through IndieBio and Rebel Bio is number one and the number two most active seed investor. So we do a lot in that area. China is less present in those spaces, but clearly they are graduating just as many PhDs in per year as the United States. So, and that is going to be increasing soon. So, so we see a lot of potential there. And obviously in the genomic space, they've got some very, very leading companies as well. So there's a lot going on, tremendous amount to be excited about in SOSB's two biggest spaces, hardware and life sciences.
Can I ask a question? Yes, I'm really interested in how you get money out of China after you make a good investment. What have been the challenges with taxes? What have been the challenges of U.S. taxes on investments? I mean, I don't know very many people ever make money in this business, in the venture business, or in the angel business.
Question,
a lot of these tax issues, you know, we have wonderful ways that we can make money here in America.
They don't want me to go into business.
But what are the challenges, serious issues, and where they stand? Anybody know?
I was doing investment banking in Hong Kong for the previous years before I joined Baidu. So, well, I can see that most of the investment that made in China, one of the way is absolutely through the IPO. And as you mentioned that recently, the Hong Kong Stock Exchange opened the door to the life science companies and high-tech companies. For those companies that was not making huge revenue, but was invested by sophisticated investors that could go directly to Hong Kong Stock Exchange. So the life science companies are right now like really rushing for the IPOs in Hong Kong right now. And also the in mainland China, the SEC of China is also opening the door to high-tech companies, especially semiconductor, artificial intelligence, and also they're welcoming those China listed, US and New York Stock Exchange listed China tech companies to go back to China, and also some foreign technology companies to list in China through the CDR, so which is a very new form of the exit.
No, there's it's not just IPO. So I Rebecca knows this story. I lived this movie, and this was 4 or 5 years ago. We sold a company to Ping An. It was for tens of millions of dollars. And the question became, how do we get the money out? You asked about taxes. The very first thing that happened, we were operational in 6 provinces. Each province thought that we owed them 20% tax. That would be 120% of our proceeds. This is true. We spent a fair bit of time with, I won't name the firm, but it's one of China's premier legal firms. Ultimately, combination of things, this was a regulated business, so we had to deal with the PBOC to an extent, but ultimately we were able to get past that so that we only had to pay 20%, and it was then sold out. But I kid you not, this was a real thing for a couple of months. The next question was, okay, now that you have this money, what do you do with it? And the second best piece of advice, or second most interesting piece of advice, was there is a trade in RMB and duffel bags going into Hong Kong to diamond stores, where in the front they sell diamonds and in the back they exchange to Hong Kong dollars. The VIG on there, the cost of that, the frictional costs, are about 12 to 15%. This was actually a suggestion that I heard from the unnamed, very large, prestigious legal firm from there. It's not my favorite, though. My favorite, as posited by one of our entrepreneurs who is Chinese, was to me directly, which was, go to a store, buy the largest diamond you can, and either put it in your pocket or somewhere else and bring it home. To which I said to my partners, if I have to do that, I'm extracting it here at the partners meeting. Anyway, at the end of the day, I mean, joking aside, we ended up being able to wire through a Woofy into another holding company, so Woofy in Hong Kong into a Cayman vehicle, but we needed to get special permission. That was 4 years ago, and the world has changed some. It's getting easier and easier. But IPOs aside, and that can be an important and increasingly accessible. I mean, this is actually, in only 4 years, you didn't really have the Shenzhen markets like you do even today. But it still is a challenge, and you know, you need to bring some heft and weight to get the money out.
Well, that sounds like a real deterrent, actually. But on the outside, let's talk about the money going in. And Mason, let me ask you, what kind of investments would you be interested in making and are making that, you would push the button? Yes.
Yeah, I think overall for the HPS group, because we're over 300 people, our thesis are pretty broad. There's 20 different sectors that we've done all sorts of investment, life science, internet, fintech. Personally, I think I'm a little bit more interested in any companies that can get to a unicorn, decacorn level. So I'm not really limited to any particular sectors. I've done some investment in space tech, a few other quite interesting ones I can't really talk about yet. But I think overall, if you're a New York-based company, definitely come talk to me, talk to Brian. We're very good with the early stage, the seed stage funding for a New York-based company.
Does the team have to be from Harvard for you to invest?
Well, yeah, so that's a common question. So the entrepreneurs doesn't have to have any affiliation with HBS Harvard. It's just the members of HBS.
So what technology sectors do you see coming up that you think China could excel in and that would be good bets for investment? Just down the line, real quickly.
I would say an AI. Well, AI, first of all, I'm maybe a little bit biased. I have a life sciences background. I got my PhD in chemistry from Columbia before I got my JD from the same school. So in my practice, I devote a lot of my time in life sciences industry. And in fact, I'm heavily involved in the Hong Kong Exchange, biotech new rule making process. But I also see there's a converge between life sciences and tech, which is the healthcare IT. And AI is going to have huge an application in life sciences healthcare. And including technologies such as blockchain. You may have heard there's a pretty famous US scientist, and he started the company using blockchain technology to track personal genetic data. And actually, the data is also a very interesting area for AI too. But data collection is also a very tricky area because, how to collect the data. And if we can apply blockchain technology, AI to analyze the data, I think it's going to not only can make money, it's going to make our life so much easier.
Could you just tell us your name again, please?
My name is Wendy Pan.
Wendy Pan from Sydney.
Yeah.
I just want to make a note. AI, we keep talking about it, but you make the point. It's really, it's a horizontal, it's not a vertical, so it applies to a whole host of, issues. But from my interest, I'm a real computer nerd. The issue is really quantum computing and photon computing. Now, probably too old, but logarithmically, everything's growing at a rather ridiculous pace. So my interest is, on my basis, because as members of what we do in the angel community, we're individuals. We don't invest as groups, we invest as individuals, like a smorgasbord, like a good food that you got out there. So I'm really interested in looking at quantum computing. The other thing is, I just got back from the Brain Conference. Everybody has one? Everybody wants to improve? Are we all getting older? Good, okay, so we're all in agreement. I'm interested in improving this. So I use all the new cool stuff because I really want this to last, and I'm feeling a little bit challenged by that right now.
Wait a minute, what was it that you're...
Excuse me? Right? Yeah, right.
So, I agree with Brian. So we spent the last 6 months at our firm looking at QC, traveling around a lot of labs, a lot of prestigious institutions. And in general, at the physics layer, at the platform layer, layer one, China's ahead of the U.S. in almost all of the categories. I mean, they really are. First of all, I think it's in the last 10 years they've had the fastest supercomputer. They've long since surpassed us in software for gaming and game theorems. They are past us in QC today. Machine learning, you're right, it's a horizontal, not a vertical. But it needs to be applied vertically, not horizontally. We invest in the machine learning companies, but only that are vertically inclined. Blockchain is interesting. So your panelists earlier mentioned that crypto has been largely banned, not so much the OTC stuff. Yes, and yet I would guess that China will probably be the first to mint their own testbed cryptocurrency, and maybe as early as 2019, almost definitely by 2020. So that's another element to, I think, their efforts to stymie a lot of the activity that's around it. They've made very heavy investments in blockchain. There are some companies there like NIO, in which I'm an investor, but there are others as well, many others, many others, some of whom have direct input from PBOC and other regulatory and government authorities. So I would not in any way assume their shields up approach in crypto is anything other than, let's bake our own at home. My expectation is they'll come back with a roar. They have been doing, since I've been going with frequency there, which is 15 years, they have been doing absolutely cutting-edge science. I mean, this notion that many Americans have of, they knock things off, that was true 25 years ago. Now they own all of the means of production in Thailand and Vietnam and Indonesia and, and a number of other places that maybe do some of that low-end work. But the stuff they're doing at Tsinghua and many other universities is as good as it gets right now.
Okay. Anyone care to add to that? That was a very strong statement. Thank you, Jenny. We like strong statements. I wanted to ask you about the electric vehicle market, because there are all these electrical vehicle makers from China, and you got Tesla going into China. So who do you think is going to actually come ahead, and China's putting all this money, government money, behind subsidizing electric vehicle and electric charging stations. So who do you think is going to get ahead?
Yeah, so we've done a lot of market research on that. I think by 2020 and 2025, China is absolutely going to be the largest electrical vehicle market globally. So which means that there is a tremendous investment opportunities there with the government subsidies for the fuel, for the energy side. And in another thing is that self-driving, the autonomous driving is an emerging technology that in the US, Waymo has been leading this market. And in China, Baidu is leading that. And Baidu has the Apollo platform that was embracing the entire ecosystem of self-driving, including the OEMs, tier ones, and the electrical car companies. And as of today, under Baidu's Apollo, embracing all of the EV entrepreneurs, the companies in China, and they have the access to all the open platform simulation and tools and accuracy maps on the Apollo platform of Baidu. So we can see that it is absolutely, coming, and combined with the self-driving technology, I think that EV and the self-driving is going together.
I worry about the self-driving technology in China, because generally the machine learning is taught by the drivers themselves. And not saying that China is not good drivers, but if you look at the cities and you say, even in New York City, do you really want, what is an autonomous car going to do? Acquaintance of mine, Shungo, who's just commenting that, if somebody walks in front of a car, is the car really going to be as aggressive as an autonomous car as it is as a New York City driver, or even worse, as a Chinese driver? I mean, I've been in a Chinese taxis where I've gone on a voyage where the first car gets in an accident, I get out, the next taxi I take also gets in an accident, I get out and I take a third taxi. This is a very, you know, where are they learning from and how are they going to do in really populated cities, autonomous vehicles? I get it for the highways, that's no problem. But, you know, I wonder how long it's going to take before, you know, and it's also illegal in China, right, for people to beep their horns in cities, right? So you can't get away with what you can get away with here if the car is being driven by a computer. It's just such a
well, question. I'm so sorry about your experience in China in terms of transportation.
Well, this has been, you know, for the last 15 years. It's getting better. Clearly, it's getting better with the driving now.
Well, there's always bike sharing.